Good morning, everyone. I wonder if everyone could take their seats. God, what a lot of stuff. Marcy, could we call the roll, please?
On the roll for the Board of Directors meeting of March 4th, 2020, Director Abe Koga, Director Barrett, Director Bowders, Director Canepa, Director Cutter, Director Joya, Director Groom, Director Haggerty, Director Hudson, Director Hurt, Director Ju, Director Niss, Director Miley, Director Rice, Director Ross, Director Sparing, Director Wagon Connect, Director Walton, Director Wilson, Director Zane, Secretary Mitchell,
here.
Vice Chair Chavez,
here.
Chair Sinks,
here.
We have a quorum.
Great. Let's stand for the pledge. And Karen, could you lead us today?
Sure. Please join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome, everyone. It is the morning after Super Tuesday, and it's been quite a week for many of us. We next have public comment. Are there any cards?
I have Yan Luo and Claire Valderrama Wallace.
Thank you. Please come right on up and let us hear what you have to say.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Claire Valderrama Wallace. I'm coming here every semester now with a group of nursing students. I'm nursing faculty at Cal State East Bay. I've lived in Alameda and Vallejo West pretty much all my life. And I'm just here just as an advocate for our most marginalized communities. And I ask because, you know, part of our nursing code of ethics is that we address unjust systems and structures. And I would hate for our work here to be part of that system. So I just ask that we center the most marginalized communities in your dialogue and your decision making. And I ask you to welcome, we have 10 amazing nurses who care for a cross section of the communities that you represent. So thank you.
Thank you for being here today. Our next speaker.
Hello, everyone. My name is Yan Luo. I'm a nursing student from Cal East Bay University. Today is my first time to be here to ask this kind of question. So my concern is, will the government do something to disinfect the transportation? Because my concern is that the coronavirus can be aerosol, those kind of airborne transmission. So will you guys take any action to reduce this kind of concern? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any more cards? Anybody else for public comment? Thank you. We'll move to the consent calendar, and I'd like to take an opportunity today to have John Joya give us a brief verbal report. There's also a written quarterly report.
Yeah, and that doesn't really say anything. That does not mention. That just lists some meetings,
okay.
Right?
Okay. Great, John. Please.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I'll just really talk briefly about two areas. Over the last few months, much of the Air Board's work has been associated with going around the state and approving AB 617 emission reduction programs. As you know, we approved ours here for West Oakland back in December. I guess it was December. And the state Air Board did as well. We've also had a chance to go to Shafter near Bakersfield and Fresno, as well as the Imperial Valley, and we'll be going to some neighborhoods in Los Angeles and San Bernardino to approve their plans over the next couple of months. And it's been really helpful and useful to sort of see this AB 617 work going on around the state and how unique and different it is in different communities. Obviously, pollution has the same impact on our health, but look in this state, but looks different in every community, right? And the mix of sources are different. For example, in Fresno, there's a lot of issues associated with agriculture. In communities around the Port of San Diego, there's issues with neighborhood uses as well as port uses. So the one thing I will say is I think in comparing what's going on around the state with what's happening here in the Bay Area, I feel that both the Richmond and West Oakland processes I think I don't want to get in the situation of comparing your districts, but I think we have a really good process that's considered a really model process in the state. In fact, when we were voting on our emissions reduction program in Fresno, there was actually a split within the community about the plan. And in fact, they actually hadn't finally even voted on the plan because it was rushed. Some of the timeframes with AB 617, as staff has told us, are very rushed. So the result of that was getting a plan that wasn't even voted on, and it was a difficult situation when you had different members of the community. So, of course, West Oakland just had, I think, an advantage over all the others because it had been in that community process had been in existence for many years. There were strong neighborhood leaders with Brian and Miss Margaret. But I have to say it's really great to see, though, how it's developed around the state and it's building capacity in communities around the state. I think there's a lot that we all can learn from each other. So I thought, anyway, there'll be more, and I'm glad to provide more detail, and maybe in one of our committees. And I know we've gotten updates from CARB staff on that. So it's important because I think all of the plans that are being approved around the state have best practices that can be used by other communities that are not AB 617 communities. So, for example, if you're an agricultural community somewhere, and you're not AB 617, you can look at some of the measures that were recommended in the Fresno plan. Or for West Oakland, if you're a port community and you're not an AB 617 community, you can look at some of the recommendations in the West Oakland plan. So, but it was very, there's a lot of unique issues. And so I will just say I want to appreciate and thank our staff for, I think, really taking the lead in conducting a very community-oriented process here, because we didn't always hear that in some of the other air districts in terms of how they were doing their AB 617 process. The other two things I'll just touch on briefly where we've had hearings and meetings are on two major rulemakings. One is a new truck rule, which we had a public hearing on, and that rule's sort of still in development, that would set dates to transition heavy-duty trucks in this state to zero emission. And I think, Jack, that is deserving at some point of having a larger presentation here about that regulation, because I think it aligns well with what we're doing, of course, our own, you know, diesel-free by 33. Clearly, these are regulations that will mandate a transition. And as usual, great advocates are advocating that the Air Board work quicker. And I think that's always an important tension to have, to say, let's work quicker. So the Air Board's looking at the rule dates, and we'll have another public hearing. The other major rule that's being developed, which does affect us here in the Bay Area, is expanding the types of ships that would be required to plug in to shore power or have some other kind of capture device for emissions. Right now, about 80% of the container ships at the Port of Oakland do plug in. I think it's close to 80% right now. But this would expand it also to the car ships that come in, that what are called roll-on and roll-off ships, which are, you know, I think Benicia and Richmond and are the two ports that have the car ships. I'm not sure if Oakland does, but so it'll apply to those, and then it's looking at applying that to oil tankers as well. There's some unique issues associated with tankers that are taking more discussion. So I think the Air Board's going through a very thoughtful process about looking how it expands that rule to capture and reduce emissions at from ships at port. So those are two major rulemakings, ships and trucks. At one other point, there is a challenge to the State Air Board's authority by the EPA, specifically its waiver. As you know, we've talked about that here. The state of California gets waivers under the Clean Air Act by EPA. And so while the Air Board is not going in seeking any new waivers with regard to any rules, EPA has challenged some of the waivers that have been issued. The state believes that we're on solid ground and will prevail in a legal battle, but I think this presidential administration is clearly making this a battle against California and saying, why should California set standards for cars? Although many states follow California's rules, as we know, but that litigation is still out there and pending, and that's why elections matter, and a new administration next January would obviously probably change the federal approach with regard to the state's authority. And both the state attorney general is also working to defend California's authority to set its own car standards. So and if there's any things in the future that you want more specific, you know, we can. I'm glad to do that in the future, Rod.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it. So with that, I would take a motion on the consent calendar, items 3 through 7. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Thank you. That passes. We'll move on now to the report of the Climate Protection Committee. Director Barrett.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. The Climate Protection Committee met on Thursday, February 20th, and approved the minutes of December 2nd, 2019. The committee received and discussed the staff presentation, Climate Change in Food, an Overview. The committee then received and discussed the presentation, Food Waste Reduction in Alameda County, presented by Cassie Bartholomew from Stop Waste. Finally, the committee received and discussed the staff presentation, Regional Food and Climate Event. The next meeting of the Climate Protection Committee will be held Thursday, April 16th at 9:30. This concludes the chair report of the Climate Protection Committee.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Vice Chair Chavez.
Thank you, and thank you for that report. One of the things I'm really interested in is seeing whether or not where we have coalitions of the willing, we can do presentations and start to spark activity in other parts of the Nine Berea counties. And so one request I have is that the staff reach out to counties to see whether or not they're interested in co-hosting something like this. I mention this because in Santa Clara County, we're going to be bringing forward a kind of a multi-pronged approach to addressing food in general. And I wouldn't want to miss an opportunity to further the work of our, you know, our joint work by missing an opportunity to include this. So that would be my request.
And Mr. Chairman, Director Chavez, just a clarification. You're referring to the fact that, and we briefed the committee on this, that we're going to be holding an event of ourselves in the fall. And I think that's what you're referring
right.
to.
Right. What I'm hoping is that, like, I realize that it's hard for you to be in nine Berea counties, but one challenge we have is that a lot of the activities that you host are really centric to this part of the county. And like I said, we're already going to be moving forward with something. I've really been trying as much as possible to align the work that we're doing in the South Bay to what work you're doing. This is just an opportunity that I'd like our county not to miss. I don't know if any other county would be interested, but in particular, I think we can bring in multiple players that are in the South Bay that would be interested in. So I'm very interested in hosting this. I don't need you to do 9 of them, but there may be other counties that say, no, I want in. So that's really what I'm responding to.
Thank you. No more comment. We'll move on to item 9, our budget and finance report. I do not see Chair Groom here, but I do see Vice Chair Bowders. Who ran the meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The report of the Budget and Finance Committee meeting. The committee met on Wednesday, February 26, 2020, and approved the minutes of November 25, 2019. The committee reviewed and discussed the presentation, Air District Audit Results for Fiscal Year Ending 2019, presented by Joseph Musa, Senior Audit Manager for Simpson & Simpson, LLP, The committee then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation of the second quarter financial report for the fiscal year ending 2020. The committee then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation options to pre-fund pension liabilities and analysis of provider returns and cost of investment. Finally, the committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, Air District Financial Plan Overview. The next meeting of the Budget and Finance Committee will be held on Wednesday, March 25th, 2020 at 9:30 a.m. This concludes the report.
Thank you. Any questions, comments? Very good. We have a lot more to do this spring on budget and finance, of course. We'll move on to item 10, our stationary source report. Chair Bowders.
I'm back. The report of the Stationary Source Committee. The committee met on Wednesday, February 26, 2020, and approved the minutes of December 16, 2019. The committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, Air District Legal Authorities 101. The committee then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, Major Facility Projects Update. Finally, the committee and the staff discussed Chair Bowder's proposed schedule of Stationary Source Committee meetings and topics and dates for 2020. The next meeting of the Stationary Source Committee will be held on Wednesday, April 22, 2020 at noon. This concludes my report.
Thank you. Questions or comments? We're just flying through these today.
And Mr. Chairman, I just want to mention to all the board that you'll be discussing kind of the schedule of your committees under item number 13.
Right.
In terms of the different schedules of all the committees.
And yep.
We came back with a suggestion for you to at least start the conversation and dialogue to figure that out.
Thank you. Yes.
Director On this Schotter. Report, I understand that Director Ju talked to you all about future ways to transition workers from fossil fuels to more green jobs. And I'm wondering, is there actually a committee or a working group, or is that a body of work we've already taken up, or are we taking it up?
So this is the conversation about just transition. This would be, I would think, a topic you would want to bring maybe to the Equity and Environmental Justice Committee, although I'm struggling a little bit as to what you bring there versus the other committee, which is the Community and Public Health Committee. So it could be either one or even the Executive Committee, too.
Well, so. One request that I would be interested in is better understanding from your perspective where it should be placed and whether or not that's a role simply for the district and or partner agencies as well that are really thinking about this body of work. And part of what made me think about it was a discussion, and I apologize, I think I overheard a discussion at MTC while I was waiting for a meeting, but it got me thinking a little bit about just the trends in workforce, and again, I'm not sure it's just us. So I'm really asking a more broad question, but I'd be really interested if there are partner agencies you think this ought to be a part of and whether or not this is an opportunity for us to potentially get, I'm not suggesting it go to BARC, but what got me thinking a little bit about it is whether or not there's an opportunity to do something ad hoc that takes members from multiple committees at least to have a discussion about where this should be placed, after you give it your best thinking.
Yeah.
Thank
you. So I just would ask the board to allow us the opportunity to think about where that maybe should go. Because it's a big topic, and you've heard it from a number of speakers from the public here speak to you about it. So definitely go back and do some thinking.
Yeah, I really appreciate Director Ju and Director Chavez's remarks. This is an important thing for us to think about. We have a lot of jobs in the Bay Area currently dependent on fossil fuels, and we know that we are seeking to make a transition, and we really need to be thoughtful about how we facilitate that for the folks that have those jobs and for the economic engine, which is the Bay Area. So thank you for that. We'll move on now to the Mobile Source Committee report. Director Canepa.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. The committee met on Thursday, February 27th, 2020, and approved the minutes of December 18th, 2019. The committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, projects, and contracts with proposed grant awards over $100,000. The committee recommends the board approve recommended projects with proposed grant awards over $100,000 and authorize the executive officer, air pollution control officer, to enter into all necessary agreements with applicants for the recommended projects. The committee then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, participation year 2022, the Carl Moyer program. The committee recommends the board adopt a resolution authorizing the executive officer to execute all necessary agreements with the California Air Resources Board relating to the Air District's receipt of Carl Moyer program funds for fiscal year 2019-2020. Allocate $3 million in mobile source incentive funding to provide the required match funding and additional monies for projects eligible for funding under the Carl Moyer program guidelines, and authorize the executive officer, air pollution control officer, to execute grant agreements and amendments for projects funded with Carl Moyer program mobile source incentive funds with individual grant awards amounts up to $100,000. The committee then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation Clean Cars for All program. The committee recommends the board adopt a resolution authorizing the executive officer to accept, obligate, and expend up to $5 million from the California Air Resources Board for the Bay Area Clean Cars for All program, and authorize the executive officer to enter into all agreements necessary to accept, obligate, and expend this funding. Finally, the committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, Air District Grant Program Overview. The next meeting of the Mobile Source Committee will be on Thursday, March 26, 2020 at 9:30 a.m. I move that the board approve the Mobile Source Committee's recommendation. This concludes the chair's report of the Mobile Source Committee.
Is there a second?
Second.
Are there any questions? I will note that the Clean Cars for All report was demonstrating that we were being very successful. I was very encouraged in the results to date, and the committee was very supportive of continuing that program, which is looking to grow into a robust initiative of the Air District. Director Hurt.
Yes, just one quick question. I appreciated the attachment for summarizing the funding awarded in 2020 and the location and the type of funding. I was curious if we have years in review to determine whether we're properly covering the needed areas and diversifying our needed applicants versus those who just know that this is a basic funding source. And I'll go on to say I understand the replacement of school buses and some of the farm equipment, but I seek to understand the criteria for determining $3 million to a private company whose clients for replacement, whose clients could receive those passed on costs instead of the board district absorbing a $3 million funding.
Damian, do you want to take that, please?
Thank you. So relative to the distribution of the funding, these programs are voluntary. Companies come forward and they replace equipment prior to the useful life of that equipment being up or prior to when it's required to be replaced by regulation. And what happens as a result is that it provides sooner air quality benefits for folks in impacted communities. About 65% of our total funding goes to folks in those impacted communities. So regardless of the company or who they work for or where they are kind of in terms of their financial perspective, these grants programs are targeted at getting those reductions faster. And the reason that we do that is because we don't have direct regulatory authority over those particular projects. So that's one of the reasons that and the other portion of your question?
Years in review, beyond just seeing the 2020.
Yeah.
I understand it's a voluntary program,
yeah.
But just making sure we're marketing and getting the word out that this is a possible funding source for
yeah.
folks.
So relative to marketing and years in review, we generally look back at the past year for the committee, but as part of Agenda Item 4, we do present an overall picture on the distribution of the funding to what, which categories and which counties over the last 10 years or so.
Mm.
So that is in there, and we can make that more explicit. And then relative to getting the word out, we do postcards to all registered owners of vehicles in the Bay Area. We do targeted emails. We do different language outreach. We use radio. We use television. And we email past grantees, and we have about 6,000 people signed up as interested parties for these grants and the dealership network. So we're out there trying to do the best we can. But as the members of the Mobile Source Committee know, we always ask you for additional ideas and to use your networks to reach out as well. So if you've got additional ideas for us, we'd be very receptive to those.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we have a motion and we have a second. Thank you very much. Any more discussion on the Mobile Source Committee recommendation? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Thank you. That passes unanimously. We will now adjourn to closed session. This is item 12, performance evaluation for our executive officer and general counsel. And we'll come back for several more items, particularly our legal presentations on our legal framework and the work of the air quality, work of the air district and air quality. Thank you. Can I ask all the directors to please return to their seats? Somebody can go. Flush the blind. All right, I think we're ready to move on to item 13. I will report on closed session. We conducted our personnel performance evaluations and had a productive discussion on that. So we will now take item 13, which is a discussion of our committee meeting schedule. There was a discussion brought through, brought by directors at prior meeting about whether we could consolidate our committee meeting days. And I believe staff has a proposal based on conversations that they've had with some of you who expressed interest in this topic.
So, Mr. Chairman, do you want me to start your discussion off?
Yes, please.
Okay. So, first of all, I want to recognize Vanessa for really owning this issue and giving it some thought. Mm-hmm. So, Marcy, can we project this one, you think? This one? So with the thought of trying to help hear your conversation, what I've heard from a number of you is you would like the idea of bunching some of the committee meetings up during the month, so that we can take advantage of you all coming here. And so essentially you would have multiple committee meetings on a given day. So if you take a look at on the top side of it, it shows the current committee meeting schedule and when typically they meet. what we're suggesting is at least for you to start your conversation, you could have a proposed committee meeting schedule that looks something like this, the bottom half of this chart, and wherein that on you'd have the board meeting the first week, which would be held this day, the first Wednesday of the month. We would basically consolidate a number of the committees to be meeting on that third week. You can see community, public health, climate, mobile, exec, personnel. And then again on the fourth Wednesday, you'd have them as well. And again, this is just some thoughts to get you all started. Vanessa, is the thinking that on some months you would have some meetings and then, right, in the other alternate months you'd have the other meetings?
That is correct. For the ones that are bi-monthly, we would just do it every other month based on the start date of which the committee chair decides to select.
Right. So if you look on, for example, under the proposed committee meeting schedule, week three, where we list for you the committee, community and public health, you'll see even months. And then you see the ones that show the odd months would be the other. So I think there's really only 2 months that need to be mentioned. April, if I recall, we're going to need to have a board meeting that third.
So the third Wednesday of April, we're going to have public hearing on fees, and then as well as in May or June for the budget hearing. So there may be times when we do not have as many committee meetings to follow the current board meeting based on the budget hearing and the fee hearing schedule.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Right. And so the other thing I was going to mention, Mr. Chairman, is typically August we go dark. So those are the 2 months where this would be a little thrown off.
That's correct. Thank
you. This is for fodder for your conversation. So.
Fodder. Well, thank you. I mean, this seems like an interesting proposal. I don't know if, given that we might have conflicts in some months and needing to reschedule to, for whatever reason, right, because of business coming up at Mobile Source or whatever, I wonder if you've received any feedback that might give us an alternate for those third weeks where we need a week three board meetings, such as, I mean, could we, if we just said, you know, Wednesdays are air district days, could we have a placeholder for in week two for these meetings? So I'll just throw that out as an idea, because it seems like now we're so stacked that we may run into some real traffic jams with the works of the committees. So I guess having said that, I'd entertain comments from board members. Director Sperring.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, Jack, you didn't mention, the reason I brought this up was that, you know, we keep talking about reducing VMT, and here we have all these meetings all scattered out, and, you know, I felt it was important. The other question I wanted to ask is that, you know, we're compensated for the meetings. Now, these meetings where you have two or three, is the board just getting compensated for one meeting?
Yes.
That's fine. You answered my question. Yes. What I had asked, too, is I'd like staff to look at what do we have to do to change that. And so I'm hoping you'll bring back to this board, and the board can decide. But I really think it's important that we look at, you know, how do we – because a lot of us, it is, you know, like for me, I'm here all day.
Right.
And so – and other members. So I'd like staff to at least explore that and you know, follow either the MTC model or some of the other agencies that compensate for these meetings.
So I can just give you all a heads up about that. So I have Alan Abbs in Sacramento meeting with different folks and exploring different vehicles to be able to change the compensation. And they've already, he's met with the Senate Governance and Finance folks with a potential idea for an omnibus bill that would change how the board members are compensated for their meeting. So we are exploring every or all options, and I plan to bring that back to the Ledge Committee.
I got you. So. Yeah, but Jack, let some of us help do that. I don't mind talking to my senator and my assembly. You know, I'm willing to do that. And most of them have come up through these other agencies, so it's not going to be a foreign concept to them. And so, but let us help do that so it's not just coming from staff.
Director Mitchoff.
Thank you. I really want to compliment Vanessa, because this is not easy. I was a scheduler, and it's very difficult. My only question, and it goes to what somebody said earlier about needing that third week, well, Rod said it. I don't have a problem marking off on Wednesdays, but it's the time in between, and maybe you've already taken that into account, but I'm thinking, it seems to me the same people are on mobile source that usually are on stationary source. There may be one or two, and I'm it's just a thought. The main question is, you wanted feedback. Nothing is going to change right away. How did you want this feedback? Through the executive committee, through the personnel committee, or just one-on-one back to you with CCs to Rod? What do you want?
So what I would, and I'm going to defer to the chair and all of you as to how you'd like to proceed, but I thought at least what we could do is you all take a look at, you know, if this would potentially work, Mr. Chairman, and we'll hear all the comments, and I can then bring it back to either an executive committee or the next full board meeting with some suggestions on how we could organize ourselves. I think the key thing, what you see us trying to do here is, one, bunch up all the committees, and I failed to mention this earlier, and Vanessa, it's also a function of the room availability, if I recall, right?
Yes, that is correct. And we're currently working with our agency partners to determine availability for the space, as, you know, MTC and ABAG also occupy the space. So we're trying to find a solution where we can utilize a room for the entire day. So we're working in conjunction with our agency partners as well.
So, Mr. Chairman, I mean, that's one approach. We can have everyone take a look at this and then tell us individually through email, will this work or not?
Well, frankly, I'd be interested in hearing from board members today as they're here, and then maybe we can move forward. I know Director Barrett was interested, and then Director Bowers.
weird. It keeps going on and off.
Five on at a time, so if we all push the buttons, it kicks the last.
Oh, okay. So we'll I'm back there. On. Thank you for that. Okay, so I'm not exactly sure I understand the plan. So if, let's say, you're on community and public health, and you're also on climate protection, and those meet even months on the third Wednesday, but they obviously won't, I mean, they're all meeting here, so they're like one after the other, or?
Right, okay. That's the thought. So you'd probably start community and public health at 9:30, and climate protection at 10:30.
So what if you're not done?
I'm sorry?
What if we're not done?
You start as soon after it as you can.
You notice it that way. You say no sooner than 10:30, right, or when the climate community public health meeting concludes, something like that.
I thought we were getting this.
Okay.
So, for example, we could have a meeting at 9:30. If we thought it was going to go an hour, that's what we figured, then we could have the next one starting.
Let's just say 11 to be easy.
Well, or 10:30, and then of course the meeting. If the first meeting finished in half an hour, we would still start the next one at 10:30. If it turned out that it needed an hour and 15, we would start the meeting immediately following at 10:45, and so forth. I think if we are talking about stacking up three or four meetings on a day, we're going to run into the lunch hour.
I only see three on any one day.
Yeah. But it may be that then an appropriate thing is, okay, you have a meeting scheduled at 9:30, another at 10:30. If you have a third meeting for whatever reason, because we need a board meeting or whatever, you could say, look, a lunch will be available from 11:30 to following. So people that are coming for that third meeting then would have an opportunity to grab lunch before, and those rolling off could grab lunch thereafter.
Like we will today.
Yeah, and, you know, typically we haven't been furnishing lunch after committee meetings.
Mm-hmm.
This would modify that, right? So one benefit you might have is the ability to pick up lunch before or after.
Okay, that's clearer to me. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Director Bowders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an excellent proposal. Thank you, Vanessa, for this work, and to staff. I strongly, if the feasibility on the building works, I strongly endorse this proposal for a number of reasons. I raised at Stationary Source Committee, but just for the benefit of those who aren't on that committee, I would just like us to think about the following things. One, we're giving the public a predictable day to be here, which is Wednesdays. And when we have the meetings scattered across all kinds of days during the month, it is very hard for public stakeholders, nonprofits, environmental groups, industry representatives to come here all the time. And so we are not just reducing our footprint of VMT, to Mr. Spearing's excellent point about how much back and forth we're doing. And if you just think about how much, I mean, I'm going to call it what it is, waste in compensating directors for driving or doing this from long distances many times a month, to consolidate it down, we're reducing our carbon footprint. We're reducing the footprint of all the people who come to these meetings regularly because their occupation depends on it. We're improving the likelihood that public stakeholders will participate because there's a known predictable day they can plan around. So it's good for the environment. It's good for our public engagement process. It's good for the people who we need to have in here. It also gives us something to plan around. I was on three or four committees last year, and one committee in particular kept getting canceled and rescheduled to random days, even though it had at the beginning, like, this is going to be the day we meet. And I missed, for that one committee, half the meetings because it kept moving around. So creating a predictable schedule works. And to the questions, I mean, I just put it this way, two last points. One, on these back-to-back meetings, in the city of Emeryville, at 7:14, we have the MESA board, which is our management of employment services. At 7:15 is the redevelopment agency, and at 7:16 is the city council. And we literally just run it, and it ends, and we then literally hammer out, gavel back in, and we go to the next meeting. And to the chair's point, if the meeting runs over, we just start as soon as the prior meeting had ended. There's continuity in doing that. And then I would just say that this type of schedule is what the Alameda County Transportation Commission does. It's what the Alameda County Healthy Homes Board does. All of our meetings are scheduled for one or two days a month in a row. And I find that gets better quorums. More people are there. They plan around it. We get through the meetings better, and we have a more synergistic conversation about the subject matter. So I think this is great, and I've always agreed with Mr. Spearing on this, and I just thank staff for bringing this forward. I know there is a question about compensation, and I think we can work through that. I would just say omnibus bills, as somebody does lobbying, are generally for non-substantive issues. So I don't know that it's extremely likely that it would make it in an omnibus bill. But I do think it's an issue that can be taken up, and in the interim, I think we should migrate over to this knowing that that can be resolved. We should migrate over to this for the betterment of the agency and good governance. Thank you.
Thank you. And then I saw Director Wagon Connect and then Director Hurt.
Well, since all politics.
Director Niss. Enjoy it.
Okay. Is it my turn now?
Yes. Yes, please.
Thank you. Since all politics is local, this will be helpful to me. So that's because then I could ride the ferry, and I appreciate that. So thank you.
So that's a vote of you like the plan. Okay. Director Hurt?
I just wanted to add my voice in this, too, in saying that I like the plan a lot. I like the idea of not coming here five times a month and just three now. And then we're living what we preach, which is, again, having a less of a footprint. So I thank Vanessa for all the work on getting this forward to us. It's great.
Thank you very much. And Director Niss.
Do we still have another item that we still have on the board now for today?
Yes. Yes.
And about how long will that take?
Well, I'm going to look to Brian.
Roughly.
You have two items. They're educational, if you will, or presentations. One is a legal framework, and then also kind of air quality 101. And the folks to my left here, we're going to
So about what time do you think we'll get done, roughly?
Yeah. So it would take a total about
Depends how many questions we have of Brian.
Right. I would guess we can get both done by 1 o'clock.
That then takes me to this. If, because I'm pretty sure I'm looking at this as week one, we'll always have board of directors on Wednesday. But once again today, you've lost your quorum, I think, and we're going over again. So, and I've said this so many times, I think we do better to have two meetings a month than at the board.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly because that is why we lose folks.
We lose people and we lose the momentum that we have as a full board. If we now go to week three of the new meeting schedule, then and all the meetings are scheduled that day, you don't have any possibility of putting in a board of directors meeting when necessary. And having been the chair, I know that there are times when you really have to have that second meeting. What do you do in that case?
Well, Mr. Chairman, relative to what you have still on the agenda today, you could move that it's designed to be educational and remind the board.
But that's not my point, Jack. My point is frequently we do go that, and most people try to get out of here by noon.
Right. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I hear you.
We could have a special meeting, though, Liz. We could have if we have to have a second one, we could set a special date through the chair for a second meeting.
Just what you talked about before, and that's what happened to me last year. Meetings got moved so frequently that I could hardly remember which day I was coming here.
Right. Well,
so it's great to have this that's predictable, but I don't know why we would do it in week three when that is where we have a potential board of directors meeting. It's always going to take an hour to an hour and a half, unless it's something urgent, which we usually don't have. But there's a lot of work that this board does. And to say that we're going to do it in, roughly 2 hours once a month, I think is aspirational, but I don't really think that it's possible.
And I'm going to agree with you, Liz. I think it's fine the way it is because we do need that. We're going to have more and more to talk about. We're going to need that third week for a meeting. And I've seen it already. I think executive can go in early, like 9, or personnel before a regular board meeting. So,
I'm fine with the proposed new schedule. The one thing that it's always been frustrating in the past is when chairs would set up meetings at the call of the chair. That is totally impossible for those of us who schedule things out months in advance with standing committees, with all the other things we serve on. So I appreciate that we have now schedule, regular these regular days, so we can at least book them out. And Wednesdays seem to work well for folks. Just as a point of information for me, Thursdays later in the month are challenging because those are often the state air board meetings. They're like the second, third, or fourth Thursdays, depending on what's going on. Usually third, but so I appreciate these are Wednesdays.
So I've heard from a couple of people that they're concerned about the length of Wednesdays and the stack up. So I'm just wondering, I'm asking aloud and looking for some feedback. Would it make any sense to have the committee meetings that are shown stacked up on the third week Wednesday, move them instead to the second week Wednesday, opening up the possibility of a third week, a Wednesday week three, four, could be executive, could be the board. And I'm wondering if those of you who are objecting to the stack up might...
Well, what I heard was that staff likes to have more than a week between our meeting on in the first week and those committee meetings. So, I mean, we could do the second week. I don't have a problem. But I'm just looking, and even the current, you know, it was the legislative committee that was at the call of the chair that, because, you know, pretty much I figure that's just the first half of the year and maybe a cleanup meeting at the end of the year. So that isn't too bad. Budget and finance is usually over by the first half of the year. That goes away on week four. So stationary source is only every other month. So, and I know mobile source is every month, but maybe I understand the need for us to walk the talk. On the other hand, looking at this, now that it's laid out, I don't see that we're really creating that much of a problem, I guess. I usually figure there's four Wednesdays, two meetings, and two committee days, but that's my feedback to your response on week two.
Okay. Let's see, there are some people we haven't heard from yet. Director Ross, did you want to?
Anything we can do to reduce, not that I don't like coming here, but anything we can do to reduce the amount of vehicle miles traveled and days here. I'm coming back here tomorrow morning for the community.
Right.
Whatever it is.
Yes, and, we got it.
And, you know, I've got the regional planning committee meeting is here this afternoon. I can't make that. I just, you know, I have another job, and I just, the fewer days I'm here, it would be beneficial. So
thank you.
I know it's gonna be complicated, and this is gonna, whatever we decide on will get modified as we learn what works and what doesn't.
I'll come back to Director Barrett, but I wondered if Vice Chair Chavez had any thoughts.
I'm always terrified of scheduling with multiple people, so I'm having a little PTSD right now, so I'm good. I'm just going to listen.
All right, fine. Director Ju, and then we'll hit Director Barrett again.
Yeah, thank you, Vanessa, for even getting to this point of having a proposal in front of us and aligning kind of all the schedule. So I'm completely supportive of kind of the consolidation, or at least attempting to, and I think this is going to be it's going to be hard to take that first step, right, because it's something new that we're all going to have to get adjusted to. And I think if there is a possibility, given building availability, to schedule kind of a special meeting day for the board, it sounds like that doesn't need to happen twice a month every single time, even though we may have times we may need the slot. So maybe that could be one of the solutions, is figuring out if, I don't know, the Thursday becomes that at the call of the chair board of directors meeting. And then as that becomes necessary, just because as you're doing your calendaring of the agendas looking forward, if we need an additional day for one particular month, maybe that's the path forward.
Okay. Is
So, Mr. Chairman, along the lines of Director Ju's comment, I was thinking what we could suggest to you is that if we have to have a second meeting, Director Ness, which I understand that does occur, we'll seek to have it on that week three or week four so that we still get the, you know, the spirit and intent.
On Wednesday.
On that Wednesdays, yeah.
So presumably, so you said in April and May we were going to need a second.
April.
Only April, not April. May.
Yeah.
So that means on you would propose on week three that we could have several committee meetings as well as the board meeting. Is that right?
Right. What we'll do is we'll have the second meeting on that week three, mm-hmm. and we'll seek to try to have the community public health and maybe climate protection afterwards or something like that, and we'll try to manage it that way.
Okay. All right.
Could I just comment on that, though? That means that, Jack, we'd get done today at 1 o'clock, and we've got three committee meetings ahead of us, right?
Right. It all depends. I need to take a look at
two.
What's
odd.
Right. There's actually.
That's what I see. I'm looking at week three.
Three would be.
Three, even if it was an even or an odd meeting.
So I guess what I'd appreciate hearing is whether directors are good with a longer, potentially week three Wednesday, or would prefer to hold week two Wednesdays for some of our meetings. Director Bowders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just note that I serve on three of the week four committees, and legislative and budget and finance, we don't have, as we have in the week three, listed the odd months and even months, but we don't. Budget meets quarterly, and legislative meets a couple times in the spring, and then we have like a planning in the fall, right? And so I would just suggest that for the purposes of an off month like April, rather to Director Niss's comment, rather than having a board meeting in the third week with a whole bunch of committees, we just simply move the committees for 1 month to the fourth week, because those boxes look full on here, but we don't have to have all of those in April, actually. Those committees don't, yeah, exactly, they're all agreeing. They don't have to meet in April, and so we can put them for 1 month into the fourth week and not have to do a board meeting with committee meetings. So I think that for the number of, we're making a big deal out of a couple months that need a third meeting or a second board meeting, I'm sorry. And so I think for those things, we should go with this plan and we should just identify with staff through the chair what those couple months are that's going to happen. And then we should just do a workaround, because committee chairs, if you came and said, we're going to need a second meeting in September, I would be happy to move my September stationary source committee meeting so that we don't have this problem. I think this is the function of just having a conversation.
Director Barrett.
Yeah.
Director Hurt.
Is August, I know August is dark for this meeting, but is it also dark for committee meetings?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Hurt.
Yeah, I think I was just going to respond to your week two, Wednesday, week three,
Thank you.
I would advocate for week three build up.
You would.
Yeah,
okay.
And leaving week two as it is proposed.
Director Sparing.
Yeah, just real quick, Jack, you know, on the compensation, depending on how you package it, there could be a savings. In other words, say it's a maximum of $200 for a day, and if you have three meetings, you can say we're saving $100 plus the VMT. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways you can package this that it would be attractive to the legislature. And so, you know, and I wouldn't mind working with you on that, but, you know, just keep that in mind that there's several ways we can do it that there would be a savings. And I think starting some of the meetings at 9 o'clock, Mr. Chairman, I think would be helpful.
Director Abaykoga, do you have any thoughts, any preferences?
I would prefer to keep week two open. And
you would?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's helpful to have 1 week free, to be honest. It's hard
to
get here.
Yeah, 1 week I can go to my Rotary Club. Okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
It's all about you.
Yeah, right. Well, I think that's actually some a fairly strong direction to move toward the schedule that we see here, and we're just, yeah, as Director Bowders said, we're going to have to be thoughtful about how we fit another board meeting in, whether that means moving a set of committees or scheduling a special board day, I don't know. But, you know, I know in other agencies, right, we're often conducting polls on preferences, and maybe we ought to think about that, right? Doodle has become a go-to tool for determining getting an upfront idea of who could attend. And one more comment? Yes.
Well, yes, because several of us sit on the ABAG Regional Planning Committee that meets on the third Wednesday of the month. And I have a meeting.
What time is that?
It starts at 1 o'clock. And so that is going to be the problem for several supervisors who sit on this committee. So I understand the need to try and consolidate. And Mr. Bowders, I love what you're trying to do. But as a former scheduler, you know, if we don't meet on legislative and I've got it marked and then another committee comes in, it's very difficult to do that. Supervisor Joya even mentioned it. There's got to be some certainty here. I can't have one committee meeting sometime this week and then sometime it's another day. It just doesn't work. I think the max should be three committee meetings perhaps on week three, but I'm on three of those committees. And if you have a board meeting, and I'm chair, so I'm being real parochial here, but Supervisor Rice sits on it, Supervisor Haggerty sits on it, Supervisor Sparing sits on it. And we've got some big stuff, as you mentioned earlier, with ABAG and RENA and housing, and we need to have those meetings. And they're currently every other month, but I think they're going to start going to monthly. So I am very much against stacking everything up on week three that way. You know, we're not meeting any Thursdays. Maybe, you know, week three is a board day and Thursday you stack them up, although there's MTC meetings. So again, Vanessa, I know you've run into this, but I am speaking as a former scheduler, and this is not easy. It just is not. And I guess under the proposal, we're saying mobile source would go even months, which And so it would alternate with stationary source or what have you. I've often wondered why we meet monthly, but we have a big agenda on every mobile source committee meeting because we're giving out grants and going through things. So, you know, Cindy, I guess she's still here. She stepped away from the room. She's going to be chair next year. And how this works out, you were talking about if we're going to be fighting AB 617 funding, there are a lot of things coming down the road. And, I'm going to back up Liz here. We need to schedule and make certain, well, let's put it this way. The third week needs to be a board day also, and if we have to cancel it or have a need to cancel it, that's fine. And maybe one or two other committee meetings can be before that at 9 o'clock, but we're going to need that week three for a board meeting.
Mr. Chair, right here. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Director Canepa.
You're
on regional planning.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you very much. You know, I'm just sorry I came late. We're trying to save a local hospital. I apologize. I left. I'm confused here, and I'm just looking at my calendar and the schedule. These are back-to-back meetings, and so
yes.
I'm just curious. Say if a meeting lasts 2 hours, some of these meetings last longer than others. What does that mean? So let me give you an example, right? So sometimes the meetings go an hour and a half, right? So I look at my days. Let me take week three, right? So mobile source. I have budget and finance. I have legislative. And then there's a break. Then I have stationary. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, for Board of Supervisors, city council members might be different. But our calendaring is so different that I'm not going to be able to be a part of these committees. And that's, to me, that seems unfair because I really like the work we're doing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why what we're doing now is not working. So I'm just curious through the chair to what we're doing now, why it's not working. We've done it for the last 7 years, 8 years since I've been on this board. I'm just curious to why it's not working. If someone can explain. Again, I apologize.
I think while you were out, the discussion we've had is that a strong majority of the folks here think we ought to try to consolidate our meeting days, and that's the thing. Can I just ask those of you on this ABAG planning meeting, it's the third Wednesday starting at 1 p.m., is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And how long will these meetings go on?
Forever. They're a standing committee.
A standing committee. Yeah, well, yeah, it would seem like we would need to be mindful about that. Perhaps at this point, having heard from committee members present, we ought to take this back and take that under consideration and also see what we have in the way of facility availability. Does that make sense? Does anybody have any other thoughts, last thoughts on this?
Well, if I could, I think this current schedule and proposed schedule should go out to everybody because mm-hmm. not everybody is here today,
right.
And some have had to leave, and they give a heads up to either, you know, the current or the proposed, because while I agree with trying to consolidate for the purpose of those who have to come from farther distances and not using, reducing our VMT, I think there is another side to it, and I think Supervisor Canepa just said it excellently, and we're not trying to differentiate between city council members and supervisors, but supervisors just do not have the flexibility on their calendar, and I'm not suggesting that city council people don't either, but it's just much more difficult. So send it out, you know, and pound them on the head. Supervisor Spearing is very good at getting people to respond to to memos. And use him. He said he'd be happy to talk to legislators. I'm sure he'd be happy to get those of us to get this into you so that this can be resolved.
All right. Thank you all, and I think it is a good idea for us to jigger this a bit or offer some options and solicit input from our board members, particularly the ones who haven't had an opportunity to comment today. We'd like fuller participation from some of the folks who aren't regularly making it So I am noting that the time is noon, wondering if we ought to postpone the two presentations that we had on the docket today. Okay, are there other thoughts on whether to go ahead with these, to postpone them?
So that would be my recommendation, Mr. Chairman. We could have both of these presentations for you at the April board meeting. The first one. April 1st. Which, of course, we can make a bunch of jokes, but we won't.
Thank you.
But, yes, April 1st is the next board meeting.
Is that agreeable to everybody, or would you like to keep going here?
I can stay.
Fine. We'll do that. Then I think we'll move on to item 16. Any cards for public comment?
Tony Fisher.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, before we do that, I'd actually like you to ask if anyone from the audience was expecting the presentation, because this isn't just about us.
Yeah.
This is about the public, and I'm kind of tired of the way the board, and this isn't a reflection on you personally, but we keep getting wrapped up into what we need, and this is about the public. So I'd like you to actually ask if the public is here for those presentations.
Yeah, I'd welcome anybody from the public speaking at this time.
Right, show of hands if they were here.
Is anybody in the audience? Are you here specifically for the presentations, items 14 and 15?
We were told there's 10 nurses here, and they've been sitting here the whole morning. So if they wanted to hear it, I just want to offer that. Thank you.
I'm willing to stay. I mean, I have this booked out. I figure I don't book right after this, so I could stay for long meetings.
Okay. Fine. We can...
At least one of them. Maybe the other one we take over.
So it comes down to the choice of the board. So the first one would be provided by Mr. Bunger, and it's the legal framework. This is something that the Stationary Source Committee, Director Bowers, I believe, heard already. The other is by Rainey and I think Henry, and it's an air quality 101. As we're not going to have Rainey here at our next meeting, so if I were to make a recommendation to you, won't you hear the second one?
I would support that. I think that the people from the health advocacy community would like to hear about air quality more than they would the regulation of refineries today.
Perfect. Is that all right, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Okay.
Agreed. Sorry, Brian.
No apology needed.
Thank you.
right. Good afternoon. All right. Good afternoon, Chair Sinks and members of the board. So this was actually meant to be complementary to Brian's presentation. In his presentation was going to be about the authorities that the Air District has, and then we were going to focus on, given those authorities, what actions are we taking as an Air District, including non-regulatory actions as well. But I think this will still stand on its own as an overview of both air quality and what the Air District does. So a lot of the presentations that we bring to the board, we focus in on one issue or one project at a time. The goal of this presentation is to connect all of the different parts of what we do together so you can see how they're connected and how they're complementary. So an outline of the presentation, we'll start with a short reminder of the Air District mission, dive into the basics of air quality and climate to make sure we're all on the same page about different terms that we may throw out throughout the work of the agency. The next couple of sections are on the foundations that ground our work here. So the scientific foundation that we have with the measurement and the modeling work that we do, as well as the focus on communities. And at that point, Henry is going to come up to start talking about communities, how we do our planning based on the scientific foundation and the coordination with communities, and then what are the tools that we are using to reduce emissions. So the Air District mission, this is familiar to all of you, but I wanted to start here as a reminder because all of the rest of the presentation will tie back to the mission of creating a healthy breathing environment for every Bay Area resident while protecting and improving public health, air quality, and the global climate. So I want to highlight the focus on every Bay Area resident, public health, air quality, and global climate as the foundations of the mission. So the next set of slides will zoom in on an overview of climate change and air quality. There's a lot of information in these slides. They're really meant for your reference into the future. I don't plan to go into all of the detail on these next set of slides, but just provide them as a reference and then highlight some kind of key broader issues. So first, starting with climate change, as you all know, there are negative impacts of climate change that span across multiple areas that impact not only health, the oceans, water, agriculture, forests, they're impacting human populations and disease. And so all of these as well are very interconnected. It is a global issue. So, you know, keep in mind that our emissions of greenhouse gases in the Bay Area are about 0.2% of global emissions. So I think that's a good reminder that we are part of a bigger community in the work that we're doing on climate. And this is an issue where the emissions are coming globally and the impacts are happening globally. So, you know, this work, Henry will talk about some of the climate change programs that we have here, but it really needs to be in a broader global context. And how are we doing on reducing our emissions? This is a figure that I find very useful, but also alarming at the same time, from the United Nations Environment Program that shows different scenarios of emissions reductions. It's from a report that came out maybe a year and a half ago, where it shows, you know, where do emissions need to be if we want to hit the 1.5 degree goal or the 2 degree Celsius goal? If we add up all of the pledges that are part of the Paris Climate Agreement, if those pledges are achieved, what are our emissions looking forward into 2030? And then in terms of what's actually implemented as of the report date, that's the blue line,
So I think this graph really shows how much we all need to do more across governments, businesses, as individuals. And then hopefully this will anchor some of the specific work that Henry will talk about in terms of our climate change work. It's not all doom and gloom around climate change. This is a figure pulled from the book that was part of Chair Sink's book club this year of Project Drawdown, where we do have a lot of solutions that are available, cost-effective solutions, where the savings that we can achieve from implementing these solutions is greater than the cost of the solutions. And you can see it's a number of them are things that are relevant to the Bay Area. A number of them are also related to things in other countries and other areas as well. But I wanted to include this as a resource for you to reference in the future. Now, turning to air pollution, in terms of the pollution that more directly impacts our health. So I noticed that as Air District staff, we use a lot of these related terms, and we jump around between them. They're all related, but they are distinct. So this slide is meant to walk through the pathway from the pollution that comes from the emission sources and how that's connected to health effects, and just define as we're using these different terms during our presentations, what do we mean? So starting from the left, emissions, that's referring to all of the emissions that are coming out of various stationary or mobile sources. The next one over, ambient concentrations, that's once the pollution gets into the air, into the atmosphere, what's their concentration? We also call that air quality. The next step over, the middle term, population exposure or community level exposure, this is this is the air pollution that a community may be exposed to. And the next one refers to individuals. So individual dosage, that's what one individual will breathe in being in a community that's exposed to air pollution. The reason we distinguish between these is that often the work that we do focuses on what a community might be exposed to, but it's important to keep in mind that every individual is going to have a different pattern of exposure as well, a different dosage, and that's what determines the health effects. The various health effects are listed here, again, as a reference, not for me to spend the time to walk through now. And then this slide, this table is actually split across the next two slides. I'm also not going to, given that it's the afternoon already, I will not walk through all of this, but this is meant to show for each pollutant, there are different sources. We categorize them in different ways, and then they also have different health impacts. So each pollutant may have multiple impacts. They may be characterized in different ways, and of course they come from different sources. So this is meant to be a guide as a reference. So if we're talking about sulfur dioxide, you can see, you know, what are the typical sources in the Bay Area? What groups do we categorize that pollutant into, and what's the level of health impacts for that pollutant?
Mr. Chair, if I could, yeah. What's the difference between the check marks and the dots?
So the check marks are whether or not that pollutant is considered a criteria pollutant by the U.S. EPA, whether it's considered an air toxic, and whether that pollutant causes odors.
So you're going to have to change your air pollutant category to move that bar over one because you've got it under impact.
So
are they both?
Yeah, I mean, I had considered odor an impact on humans. So, but I can see it being the other way as well.
Well, you just need a legend on here because now what are the dots?
And then the dots are a very qualitative level of impact.
So carbon dioxide under impact climate is the greatest of all of those yes, from an
so
impact.
So if you look at the greenhouse gas emissions in the Bay Area, the total emissions, carbon dioxide has the most
and
impact.
It's a great slide, and there's a lot of information, mm-hmm. but we do need a legend.
Yeah, sure, we can
And the point of confusion for me, to Karen's point, is although odor is considered an impact, you're using check marks as opposed to dots, and I don't know if that has significance.
We didn't use dots because ranking the relative odor of different substances is hard. So for health and climate, we have ways of quantifying it, whereas with odor, it's a little bit harder to say.
And so again, the distinction between a check mark and a dot is what?
So a check mark is, so let's take sulfur dioxide. So in this case, the check mark means it is a criteria pollutant and it causes odors.
Okay.
It has a moderate, compared to the other pollutants, a moderate level of health impact.
Okay. So it's a way of not trying to quantify.
Yeah.
You're not quantifying.
We're not quantifying the odor.
Thank you.
Impact. So let's see. So that's the second part of the slide. And then now this is starting to transition into talking about the work that we do at the Air District. So the next set of slides that I'll talk through talk about the measurement and modeling work, which we basically need to be able to assess what the air pollution problem is in order to be able to do something about it. And we do that through a combination of direct measurements when we can, and then computational analyses and modeling as well. And we combine that together. So often when we're presenting data to you all, it's a combination of measurement and modeling. In general, measurement data, we have more confidence in it. Through all of the quality systems that we have to have in place when we conduct our measurements, QA and QC. But we can't take measurements everywhere and at all times. And so on the flip side, modeling information is, we have more uncertainty in that, but we can do modeling across a broader geography, across multiple points in time as well. So this slide covers first the different kinds of measurements we're taking throughout the Bay Area. Starting from the facility level, we do source testing, which is emissions from facilities. And then expanding from the facilities, there's also fence line monitoring to be able to track any emissions that might be coming from the facilities that would impact communities. And then getting more into the community side, we have a regional network of about 35 monitoring stations. These are high accuracy equipment. A lot of it is required by EPA in terms of being able to track our progress towards the national ambient air quality standards. So that's kind of, considered the gold standard of data that we're collecting. We also have a number of portable and mobile monitoring projects and tools that we have in-house that allow us to take measurements in different parts of the Bay Area that are still pretty high accuracy. And then there's also a lot of talk. We don't run any sensor networks, but we work in close partnership with a lot of community groups and partners who are operating low-cost sensor networks that allow you higher density data for community-led science projects. So when you combine the air quality measurements that we're taking with some computational models, that allows us to not only say what the air quality is at this moment, but it allows us to do some forecasting. So that's where our Spare the Air alerts come from, our air quality advisories. Some other examples of modeling that we're doing would be the emissions inventory. So these are comprehensive estimates of sources of air pollution. On this slide, the example that you see is for particulate matter 2.5.
one specific pollutant, and the estimates of the different sources and the contributions of different sources. And then there are also emissions inventories for a number of other pollutants as well. And then finally, the advantage for, this is my last slide, the advantage of modeling is that you can start to connect where pollution is coming from, the changes that happen to the pollutants in the environment, how they travel, how they interact with each other and with meteorological conditions, and start to get at how they impact a specific community as well. And so a lot of the modeling tools allow you to break down, you know, what happens with pollution. For example, in this case, this shows how do different sources of pollution contribute to air quality in a particular community, source apportionment. So this shows a few maps of the contributions of from marine vessels, locomotives, and permitted facilities to, I think this is looks like East Oakland, sorry, West Oakland. So at this point, I will turn it over to Henry to walk through the rest of some of the air district functions.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Sinks, members of the board. I know we've kept you here a long time. I'll try and go quickly, and we can certainly come back to any slides that are of interest to you folks. So embedded in the middle of this presentation is this community slide, but it's really, I consider it one of the most important ones in the whole slide deck, because we have been working with our community engagement staff, and they're helping us understand how to really step up our game on community engagement in pretty much everything throughout the district. Everything that Rainey described, everything that I will talk about, we're really trying to double down and make sure that we're speaking to the public that we serve. You've heard us talk a lot in the past year or two about AB 617. That has really been a game changer for us, how we do our air quality planning work in cooperation with communities. We've had community grants for many years. We've had the James Carey Smith Community Grant Program that we've given out community grants to small local organizations. And then more recently, there are larger AB 617 implementation grants that we give out throughout the region in those 617 communities to get immediate emission reductions in our most impacted communities. Youth engagement, we're looking for ways to step that up and improve. We have the YES conference coming up later this month, which is really cool. Every year we have this YES conference to Youth for the Environment and Sustainability, I think is what it stands for. And one of the things we're going to be doing this year is talking to the students, how can we tell us what we could do to improve our work with youth? So have sort of a focus group, if you will. So that's one of the goals of the YES conference. Tell us how we can work with teens better. And public participation plan, we've had this for many years. It informs how we do our work with the public. And as you'll be hearing at the committee tomorrow, we're going to be looking at some tuning that up.
I have a comment on this slide. Can I make a comment on this slide?
Certainly.
I appreciate that these are all strategies to develop collaborative relationships, supporting our mission, working with communities, but I would still observe we are a regulatory agency, and we can have cooperative relationships with community in our regulatory process. If the one most powerful tool we have to regulate emissions, while all of these are important, is our regulatory authority. So I would just submit that we should include the regulatory process on this, because we want to engage the community into regulatory process. Getting youth engagement is great, but they just don't want to engage us. They want it to lead to action, and action is regulation. Even AB 617 are strategies that have to be implemented by either us through a regulation or through enforcement or through a local land use agency. So I think we shouldn't gloss over, and we should include in this how our regulatory process also is focused to work with communities.
I couldn't agree more, Director Joy. Really, I see this as a lens for every single slide in this presentation today.
Right.
It's sort of this is a lens that we view this through. And
right.
I'll speak about our regulations just a moment. So, but before we get to regulations, we want to set a strategic vision. Where do we want to go as an agency? So we, for many years, have done regional air quality plans under the federal or the state Clean Air Act. And many of you were on the board a few years ago. Our most recent regional Clean Air Plan was the 2017 Clean Air Plan, which is a multi-pollutant plan. We just started doing that in 2010, developing plans that focus on several different air pollutants at once. And this set very, you, the board, set very ambitious targets to attain our ozone and fine particle standards in the region, to reduce exposure in our most impacted communities, and to achieve deep reductions in greenhouse gases that align with the state's greenhouse gas goals. But we're also doing a lot of local planning, and we've talked to you very much about the AB 617 process. I think you're all very familiar with that by now, and that's how our planning is working today. And so we last year successfully completed the West Oakland Community Action Plan. You've heard a lot about it. I think for me the major takeaways are that close engagement with community, the sharing of power with community groups, the hyper-local technical work, sort of the work that Rainey was describing at a very, very localized level, and a multi-agency control strategy. Those, I think, are the three takeaways for the West Oakland Plan. We're spinning that up in Richmond, San Pablo. We're now setting up the community monitoring program, and later this year we're going to be transitioning over to a planning process. They will be our next community emission reduction plan under 617. And then in our other 617 communities, we're building those relationships. That has been so key to this whole process, having good relationships with the public agencies and with the community NGOs. So we're laying that foundation in some of the other communities, so we'll have a good start. So to Director Joya's point, we do a lot of rulemaking, and this is indeed our bread and butter, as Director Joya pointed out. We have a number of regulations, and within each of those regulations, there may be many rules. You can see in Reg 8, we have a whole lot of regulations for organic compounds. That sort of is a reflection that for many years, we were all about reducing ozone. We had a lot of organic rules, a lot of NOx rules to reach our regional ozone standards. And those are still very, very important. But we're also now moving, you sort of see new rules. We have more Reg 6 rules for particulate matter because we know that's what the health effects, where the most serious health effects are. So we've been bringing to you in recent years PM rules. We will be very soon creating a Reg 13 that will have some methane rulemaking to reflect our greater focus on GHG. Once we implement those rules, one of the main ways we implement those are through our permitting. And Brian will talk about this a lot more when he goes through his legal review, but very quickly, this is one of our largest divisions. We have over 10,000 facilities throughout the district that are permitted, many sources, over north of 24,000. Our engineering staff processes over 1,000 permit applications per year. Risk assessments are associated with many of those. Authorities to construct and permits to operate are the main permits that our engineering staff processes, and they also do a lot of the work on maintaining the emission inventory that for all of our pollutants that are then submitted to the state, the Air Resources Board. But we have to enforce those permits, and we have to enforce those rules. So we have a compliance and enforcement staff that does that work. And I want to emphasize the compliance part. We don't want to just go out and whack people with tickets. We want people to comply with our rules. So there's a heavy emphasis on helping people understand what the regulatory requirements are and bringing them into compliance. And so we do advisories. We do compliance school. We have special programs for small businesses and so forth. And that resolves many of the non-compliance issues. Sometimes we do have to go to a notice of violation, and our enforcement staff would work with legal and when penalties may be required. We do a lot of routine inspections. Just inspectors go out and make sure that facility is following all the requirements, all the conditions in our rule, in the permit. And we also, the inspectors are in the field responding to complaints. When you smell something, if you see a plume of dust, any sort of complaint, we'll send an inspector out and respond to that complaint. We do a lot of interagency work, working with other resource agencies, and we also do a lot of work with communities. All those 617 meetings that we've had, we always have compliance and enforcement staff there. They are our eyes and ears out there. They know the neighborhoods better than any of us here in the building, and they're a great resource in those community conversations. And enforcement has been a real concern, both in West Oakland and Richmond, San Pablo. So their participation in those meetings is really, really, really important. Do a lot of work with different levels of government, all our sister agencies at the state and regional level. So we certainly work with the California Air Resources Board and other state agencies on rulemaking. We work with CARB. We support their rules or comment on their rules. We have memoranda of understanding for our inspectors help enforce some of CARB's mobile source regulations. For instance, idling limits or some of the truck regulations out at the Port of Oakland. Our inspectors help enforce those rules. And then work with CARB and the Office of Environmental Health Hazards Assessment on health studies of air pollutants and other policy work that we engage in. And then we try and work with our other air agencies. We do work with our other air agencies through CAPCOA, make sure that we're coordinating the different the activity of the different air agencies throughout the state as best as possible. Here in this building, we work with BARC and with MTC ABAG and with BCDC on a number of initiatives. I've listed a few here. Plan Bay Area is certainly very important, aligning our regional plans with MTC ABAG's regional plans, making sure land use and transportation strategies really do whatever they can to reduce vehicle use, and then working on aligning our policy and funding programs. We work with MTC to implement the commuter benefit program. That was in the bill. And then through BARC especially, we've collaborated on a number of different climate initiatives. You may recall last year we prepared a solar toolkit for cities and counties that may be interested in adopting REACH codes. We worked with BARC to develop a toolkit to make that easier for local staff. So we do work quite a bit with your local staff, city and counties. We do a lot of work. We consider ourselves a really good bridge between the California Air Resources Board and all the cities and counties here in the Bay Area. So certainly through CEQA, we have our guidance that we put out that helps local lead agencies do the air quality and GHG evaluations and CEQA documents. We also review and comment on CEQA documents prepared by other lead agencies. We do a lot of policy work with cities and counties. They don't, most cities and counties don't simply have the resources to have air quality and climate experts. And so that's where we can step in and provide data, provide best practices, convene meetings to support local staff who you and your local jurisdictions might challenge them to bring back a policy or a program for you. And we then they'll often call us up and say, hey, my city council asked me to do such and such, help me out. A lot of grants and incentives. I think you're all very familiar that we do a lot of, we program a lot of money to support city and county clean air and climate programs. We've talked a lot about the collaboration on AB 617 with city and county planning departments and health departments. Very important that they're very closely involved there. And then for incidents, we've talked a lot the past couple of years about the wildfires. Our compliance and enforcement staff and communication staff in particular have worked very closely with first responders and on messaging when those events do occur to get good information out there to the public who's very concerned about health effects of fires or accidents, upset conditions. Climate. We have a robust climate program here. Rainey talked about this sort of at the more global scale. These are some charts. Greg showed one of these at your retreat in January. It's just a picture of if we're two categories of greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide and methane, what are some of the major sources? We're data nerds here. We always start our policy work with understanding where the pollution is coming from. So this helps us figure out where to target our policies and rules and programs. Very busy slide. I'm not going to go through all this, but what we want to try and convey here is that we try and embed climate protection in many of our different functions here. The work with cities and counties that I was describing, a lot of that is to support the local climate action plans that many of you are doing at home. The planning work, the grants and incentives is certainly very helpful to provide the resources to the cities and counties to get things done. Convening meetings and events. And we will be bringing some rules to you. As we told you at your retreat, we're working on some methane rules that we will be bringing to the board later this year. So it's a very multi-sector approach to our climate program throughout the agency. Grants and incentives, you all know that we give out a lot of money, particularly through the Carl Moyer program, through our Transportation Fund for Clean Air, to get cleaner vehicles. Yeah, now we're moving towards electric vehicles and electric vehicle infrastructure, charging infrastructure, cleaning up those trucks, buses, the off-road sources that contribute diesel particulate in our impacted communities, and then some other more unique types of funding programs, for instance, some climate grants that we've given, the fireplace replacement, and so forth. I'm almost ready to wrap up, but related to our funding programs, we also have our technology information implementation office that we created a few years ago, and this is really about elevating and boosting and growing emerging technologies and working with the state on financing and loan guarantees to help grow new technologies. And our early focus is on these two sectors, well, areas, if you will, wastewater treatment and improved energy storage technologies. And last, we want to get the word out. There's only so much we can do through our regulatory programs and our incentives and our policy work with other government agencies. So we do a lot of outreach to the public. So our Spare the Air program, you all are very familiar with. Those percentages, we do a survey every year at the end of the Spare the Air season. Did you change your behavior this year? It's just sort of track the public awareness of what we're doing. All the media work, you must see us on the news all the time, especially when there are incidents. It's especially important when we have these industrial accidents or a wildfire. We really want to get out there and provide good information through the media to the public. And then this last slide is just what some of those platforms are, that it's how we communicate with the public and with you and your constituents. That is a quick overview of our functions, and Rainey and I are happy to answer any questions.
Wonderful. And I wonder first if we have any input from the public.
I have Denise Kuwasai.
Thank you. Denise, come on down.
Hi, everyone. My name is Denise. I'm a resident of Union City. I'm interested in getting an electric vehicle, but I live in an apartment complex. Is the board considering any measures to create more charging stations in the future?
Okay. I think we have a lot to say about that.
I can
Dreyer?
Just briefly respond also as a member of the State Air Resources Board and the state strategy. There is a lot happening to recognizing that probably the biggest gap that exists for EV charging are multifamily units for existing. New ones that are being constructed will have EV chargers as part of construction. So there's a number of grant programs, so from a combination of the Volkswagen settlement with the state of California or Electrify America, and with the program by PG&E, as well as some with local air district, that area has been targeted. It's more expensive than new ones, but yes, that's been recognized as an area for existing, and which is also why, you know, more chargers in neighborhoods as well are being built, right? But clearly being able to charge at home or work are the two most common places for people. So yeah, there's a number of funding opportunities that recognize that as a gap.
Jack?
Mr. Chairman, I'll have Damian follow up with her.
Yeah, it's really important, and I know that Assemblymember Murat Sushi in Sacramento has also been eagerly trying to create incentives and the right framework. But these older complexes are difficult to retrofit and expensive to retrofit. So, but I know we've had a number of discussions about this at our Mobile Source Committee. Director Chavez.
Thank you for the reminder. I think this is something we should probably do, you know, every year or so, especially as we get new members on. I was curious about whether or not we have ever considered community regulation. And what I mean by that is that at the county, we followed San Francisco, and we have an Office of Labor Standards. And as part of that Office of Labor Standards, we have money that we've set aside for nonprofits to go do community education, and you know, frankly, they get deeper into the community than we could. They're multilingual, multicultural, and then we have a portion of them that are acting on behalf of us by kicking up to us the complaints that are existing. And I say that because I think one point that you've made to us, and I think it's an important one, is it's a nine-barrier county, and how do we get deeper into our communities? And I think if we could find partner agencies in each of the counties, I'm particularly mindful of this relative to Woodsmoke, because wood smoke is the in my estimation, it's one of the biggest opportunities that we have in terms of really impacting, you know, the quality of air, especially in well, depending on the communities we're in. I think it would be interesting to take a look at the Office of Labor Standards model and see if it's applicable. I also think it may be a very cost-effective way to engage our nonprofit partners that are already really interested in this kind of work, but are really trying to understand what's the most proactive way that they can help us, you know, reach our goals as a community. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Bowders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have three questions, one for Rainey, one for Henry, and one for Judith. So the first one, I'll go backwards in the slides to make it easier for Marcy. The first one's on slide 24, or whoever's operating the slides. Thank you. So this one's for Henry. I see in here we have trip reduction and we have bicycle lanes, pass, and parking, and I appreciate the public comment about electric charging vehicles and the work that CARB and others are doing on this, and I'm the squeaky wheel unless you use, you know, bike oil. And so my inquiry is, why do we have, or have we ever discussed having a e-bike program? We're willing to give people electric vehicles. We're willing to give all kinds of grants for shuttles and buses and charging stations. But one of the things that I've discovered in my work is that there's so many people who would use a bike, but they feel physically not ready to do so. And different parts of the Bay Area, I live in the Amsterdam of the Bay Area where it's flat and the water is right there and everything is bikeable. But if you live in Marin County or some other places, it would be more of a challenge. And there are people who are exploring e-bikes, and they are currently, the prices are coming down, but they're currently not as financially accessible to people. And I just look at the grants we give for cars, and it's like 7 e-bikes right there. And so I just wonder what we're doing on that and what we can do on that and why if that hasn't been a conversation, why isn't it?
I'm going to start, and then I think Damien or Karen might want to add to my remarks. But one example, I think you make some great points. Recall a few years ago, we funded sort of the pilot of the regional bike share program, which is now we've handed off more to MTC to administer. And that the market has responded. And as you know, there are many e-bikes in that Bay Area bike share fleet. Whether we, through our granting, do fund e-bikes, I'll let Damien handle that one.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the board. So through our Clean Cars for All program, there is an option that has been proposed for the program that will provide grants for e-bikes specifically. And that's also targeted at lower residential, at our lower income residents. We're currently working with the ARB to try and push them to develop guidelines for that. It's in their hands to develop those guidelines, so we're pushing as hard as we can to make that an option rolling forward. So it's a point that's well taken, and we are working on it.
Thank you for that. And so I would speak to our local ARB member and just say, please call me if you need any guidance on guidelines. I would love to see us be able to not just be putting ads out on our social media advertising rebates and grants for electric vehicles. As I've said, if you're part of traffic, if you're in the traffic, you're part of the traffic and you're part of the problem, regardless of what your particular car emits. But people who want to have an active transit lifestyle, we just don't quite get there in making it accessible. So I'm happy to hear that. My second question is on slide 6, and this may be the cheeky question, but
cheeky,
yeah, like a monkey. Bottom right corner, there's two big pink pies. One says we can reduce climate change significantly by educating girls. Can you explain?
Yeah, so this is a global analysis.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know the details of how Project Drawdown did it, but educating girls is related to a lot of other benefits down the line. And I think it's these other benefits that are resulting in behaviors that are reducing greenhouse gases.
Because I gathered that by the family planning pie piece, which is without family planning, having worked in and lived in the third world, like having access to family planning reduces human population growth, which also then reduces consumption and the overproduction of food, all the things in the bigger wedges. So I just wasn't sure if educating girls had a specific nexus. But
I think it's because it's cross-cutting. And just one example from the area of work that I was involved in before, which was, you know, trying to reduce open burning of wood and dung and charcoal in homes for cooking and heating. So a big component of reducing the fuel use and reducing the indoor air pollution was around educating girls, and by doing that, there were other opportunities, economic opportunities for the girls. People could afford improved technologies. So this one, I'm not as familiar with this section of the pie, but I think it is because it's touching on so many other areas.
Okay, thank you for that. And then my last question was for Judith. We have a set of mandates, and we focus on particular sources, right? Our organization and its work on reducing emissions is focused largely on sources. There was a question asked at the outset of this meeting about our engagement in the coronavirus. And I know that we're not a public health agency, and so we don't work with infectious disease specifically, and that's not our target. But I thought about the question a little bit, and I think it's a good one because it raises a couple set of questions that we do deal with that overlap. So for example, in the, however you want to characterize the American government's response to the threat of the coronavirus, people in mass went out and purchased large numbers of masks. Masks that we recommend and we try to deliver to people for something they actually can protect against, which is wildfire smoke, right? And so I just started to wonder, do we have places where we should be working more closely with the health sector, the public health sector, on infectious disease or airborne illness insofar as how we have overlapping resource needs and whether or not we're prepared to deal with the kinds of crises we encounter, wildfires, stationary flare-ups, things like that, at the same time, like concurrent to things that perhaps a more discrete field like public health and infectious disease is working on things.
Hmm. Oh, Chair Sinks and board members and Director Byers, it's an interesting question. So we have been increasing our work with the health officers through Abajo and through our liaisons, Abajo being Association of Bay Area Health Officers. If we're talking about masks in particular, some of the messaging that I've heard from CDC and other health organizations, you know, masks are a very controversial topic. And I think some of the messaging that I've heard is to the public, it's don't rush out and buy masks. It's limiting the supply to health providers that really need masks.
And people who are sick. That's what
people who are sick, right. So especially in hospitals and in clinics or, you know, as this particular situation unfolds, you know, I think that we're seeing evolving recommendations and strategies for how to deal with it. So I think we'll continue to keep in contact with our county health officers and with their health departments, and perhaps our role will evolve. But it's an interesting question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Other comments? I'll simply add to this. At the Rotary International Convention in Hamburg last summer, there was a presentation that got started in France by some Rotarians to provide very ruggedized bikes in developing countries. Really a remarkable story. They would gather pieces from around the world, assemble the bikes in country. So the people that were going to get the bikes would actually have a hand in that. And then they were given and are being given to girls. And why? Because typically their duties within their homes to, you know, feed the family and do all of those things don't allow them an education. They don't afford the time to walk to the nearest school, takes too long, and so they forego school. So the bike project actually would gives them the ability to do both, to take care of their responsibilities at home and also attend school. And this program has demonstrated incredible effectiveness. So, and I appreciate your thoughts on e-bikes as well. So, if there are no more comments, we could move on, I think.
The
site for this is called, I believe, Bikes for the World, if you're interested in looking it up. So, we'll move on to public comment.
Tony Fisher.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chair and Board members. I am Tony Fisher, representing the Coalition for Clean Air. I would like to focus on the need to identify all residential neighborhoods in the Bay Area which experience PM2.5 levels above the 24-hour standard. The existing district map of high wood smoke, or HWS areas, and the community air risk evaluation, or CARE program, does not include the many other residential neighborhoods in the Bay Area that experience elevated PM2.5 levels during the winter season. The map by the district, which is on its website, under the Wood Smoke Reduction Incentive Program, shows an estimated 50% of the Bay Area land does not take into action such other residential wood burning. As such, the Coalition for Clean Air recommends that the district staff initiate an effort with its counties and cities to identify their other area residential neighborhoods outside the HWS or CARE scope and determine through monitoring or modeling those related neighborhoods which pose exceedance of the 24-hour PM2.5 standard during the winter wood burning season. I have also talked this over with Mr. Broadband. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. More cards? No? If not, we'll move on to board member comments, item 17. Director Bowders.
I just have a question. What is the fun thing on our desk?
We're going to talk about that next.
Oh.
We're going to get to that. I know we are during the executive report. Any other board comments? Okay. Jack, take it away.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and under my remarks, Director Bowders, that's information about the YES conference. And so you also have this other paper that's in front of you. Just a couple of highlights. The YES conference is going to be on March 28th, Saturday, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at El Camino High School in South San Francisco. Encourage any of the board members to attend. It's always been a very big success, and we're planning for another one. I just want to also highlight a couple other key meetings that are coming up between now and your next board meeting. You have on March 24th, which is a Tuesday, you have a PM symposium with the Advisory Council is going to be holding, and that's one to hear the voices of the communities are going to be speaking. So it's over in Oakland, the Oakland Marriott, from 9 a.m. to 4. It's I'm going to be sending some more information out to the board, Mr. Chairman, about this meeting. But it's we've got some really good speakers and then some venues to have the community leaders and voices in the not only the 617 communities but elsewhere give us their input on steps and approaches we should be taking to limit PM in their communities. Finally, the Air and Waste Management meeting, I'll just mention that, that's in June, the end of June. It's going to be here in San Francisco at the Hyatt. And I think, Mr. Chairman, you might have that item as well to mention that you need to let board members know about that conference. I did want to highlight, we have just hired a new employee in our exec office that you'll be possibly hearing from. Her name is Amanda Baldnick. If Amanda is still here, she can stand up and be recognized. Thank you for joining us. And that's my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to the chair's comments, a report. If you are interested in attending the Air and Waste Management Association conference, please contact Vanessa no later than Friday, March 20th. So again, if you're interested, the conference runs from June 29th to July 2nd here in San Francisco. The next Board of Directors meeting will take place on Wednesday, April 1st here at 9:30. I wanted to also let you know that we'd received a lot of reception. A lot of you on the board are interested in serving on our ad hoc committee on equity and environmental justice, and we're actually oversubscribed. So I've asked Davina Hurt to chair this ad hoc committee. Yeah. Our first meeting will take place on the 25th, Wednesday, the fourth Wednesday of the month. Hopefully that's not too controversial. And I've also appointed the following, considering balance and everything else, the following directors will serve on this committee initially. In addition to Davina, Director Bowders, Joya, Groom, Jew, Miley, Rice, Ross, Walton, Wilson, and Zane. Okay? And that will bring us to a full committee. So I appreciate everybody's support for this initiative and think it's a good time. Director Hurt, do you have any comment?
I'm excited for March the 25th. I think we have a lot of good things to work on and goals. And of course, I'm one of those folks that look at measuring our success by having true action and steps that make a difference in people's lives. So I'm excited about the committee.
Very excited.
What time will the committee meet?
We'll let you
know. Good question.
Okay. But it's Wednesday morning, right?
Stack up somewhere in there. And I think the first goals of the committee are to think about its name. I think names are important. Is this the right name, or do you feel like it ought to be something else? And maybe we'll hear from the communities about that. Environmental justice is quite a term, and we may have people who want to weigh in on that. Secondly, the charter, right? So what exactly do you want your focus and subject matter to be for the initially? So I'll bet that'll take a whole meeting just itself.
At least. And I do welcome the public to suggest names for our group so that we can really talk about them. And it is not just about us, as it's been said before. It's about the community. So
yeah,
all voices to be heard.
I'm really appreciative that so many of you stepped up and expressed interest. I know it takes time, and it's an important discussion to foster here. So thank you very much. Our meeting is adjourned.